Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I get to welcome business integrator Holly Chantel to the show. Now, for over a decade, Holly has been helping visionary service professionals bring their brand, business model, and marketing systems into alignment with their next stage of growth. Holly specializes in working with established coaches and service professionals who have reached an upper limit in their business and want to offer higher ticket programs. I really want to talk with her today because I am there, and she helps create a more scalable business model. So in this episode of Your Partner in Success Radio, Holly is going to share the two most common reasons successful businesses stall out or hit a plateau that they can't get beyond, why your efforts to raise prices or scale may have failed in the past, how your personal growth affects your business and what happens when they aren't kept in alignment, and how, this is important, how she went from working 60 hours a week, just 60, Holly, really? How'd you do that? To 25 hours a week without compromising income or client results. Holly, good morning. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio.
Thank you for having me. I'm really stoked to be here.
Oh, it's exciting. We had a terrific pre-interview, and I was scribbling notes like crazy. Okay, I have to ask her this, and I need to know about this. So I'm going to try not to interrupt too much, but this is an exciting topic for me, so I can't promise. Let's just get that out of the way right now.
Discussion is always way more interesting than, you know, the blah, blah, blah that sometimes happens. So please interrupt. Let's talk about this. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I agree, and thank you. Listen, before we get too far down the rabbit hole, tell people a bit about yourself, and not really where they can find you. I'll ask you that at the end of the show, but let people know why you do the things you do and how you came to do it, because stories are terrific.
Yeah, so I started back in 2009. I was straight out of college, and I just kind of knew, I've known since a young age that regular jobs are just not for me. I always knew I'd have some kind of business. And I started off offering website design for coaches. And the reason being is that I actually really wanted to be a coach. And I didn't think that it was, I thought it was just going to be too hard to sell because it wasn't tangible. A website is something that, you know, someone can hire you for, and it's done, it's complete, it has an outcome that you can promise. And coaching just seemed really, you know, a little too ambiguous. So I honed my skills helping other coaches market themselves online and get really dialed into their messaging and how they were going to reach their clients and position themselves to the point where then I felt like I could do it. So kind of the opposite of what a lot of people do. I learned through, you know, working with a lot of different types of clients in different markets and just really having kind of a broad range to be able to test what kind of messaging worked and what kind of business models worked, and kind of coming up to my own conclusions that then I was able to apply to my business. And, you know, now what I do is pretty much just strategy consulting. I do some copywriting, but the people I work with, like we're what I call trailblazers. So the work that they do, they're not all coaches. There's, you know, I work with private practitioners, attorneys, massage therapists, psychotherapists, that kind of thing. And what we do is, like, the common thread is that the stereotypes of whatever industry they're in doesn't fit them. People come to them expecting, you know, talk therapy, or people come to them expecting, you know, a general, just a massage, like that's what I'm used to. But there's so much more to the work they do, and they are so passionate about those nuances and that, and the process or the method that they use that's maybe non-traditional, that it's harder to describe. And those are the people I specialize in now, because I've gotten really good at dialing into How do we describe those things that are undescribable? And how do we make them really tangible so that they're easier to sell? Because, you know, you don't have to have a tangible, like, thing you can hand someone in order to sell it, especially in today's world online. But we do need to make it tangible enough that people can wrap their head around what they're going to experience, what the outcome is going to be, and trust and feel certain that you're going to be able to solve the problem that they have.
And see, I've done kind of something similar. You know, I started out with my computer science degree that nobody cares about but me, because I went through it and I had to pay for it. And I'm very proud of it, but nobody really cares. And I did the same thing. I'm a web developer, online business manager. But over time, I realized that more than anything, I was a consultant. Because mm-hmm. as a web developer, and you know this, you just described it, you can't just go, here you go, here's some pages, here's a form. Oh, do you need some social media? Okay, let's plunk those little icons up there as well. You have to really dig in to what it is that your client needs to portray to the world at large. And so many people, and I know you know this, so many people come to me and say, okay, I need this, I need this, I need this. By the time we're through, a couple of hours later, they're going, I had no idea. And
right.
they have a much better idea of how they now need to find their audience and reach their audience and speak with their audience. Completely different. So that consultation part to me is probably the most important part of a lot of what we do, of what I do anyway. Sounds like you as well.
Definitely. And what I found was that you were lucky if the person knew what they wanted.
Yeah, they don't. That's their rule. They're always like, but I want. No, you really don't. That's not even where you need to go. So I've talked people out of more things that they just knew they needed. I'm like, you really don't. And here's why.
Well, a lot of times, you know, the client is coming with their own set of, like, their own expertise. And they might have been, you know, listening to experts or reading books or whatnot about marketing. And they hear a strategy, makes sense, they can see themselves applying it, but then when the rubber meets the road and they're actually implementing it, they're not really sure how it applies to their business. And all of the pieces and the decisions that they need to make and have in place in order to execute that strategy. So for me, that was the biggest challenge with websites, is they knew they needed an opt-in offer, didn't know what it needed to be in order to attract the right audience. Like that's a nuance. It's not just a pick out of a hat, you know, what will people opt in for? You need to make sure that your offer is going to attract the right people. Otherwise, you end up with a list of people that, you know, aren't really well suited for your services. They might be able to not, they might not be able to afford you. They might not be ready for the kind of work you want to do. So just like those, dialing into those details, what I found was really, really important. And that is really what gets the people the results from their website and the marketing and the strategies that they're doing.
And, I mean, you're talking about something very important here, that, and a lot of people will come to me, and I'm sure you and every other web developer or service provider I've ever known, they come, you know, oh, I want to copy this website. I really like what Seth Godin is doing. Mm-hmm. Honey, you're not Seth Godin. The answer's no.
Right.
Let's figure out who you are, what your true messaging is, what your true, what you really do bring to the table, and let's go from there. Let's, you know, you are unique. Let's make this unique. And once people understand that, they're like, oh, I think, and I don't know how this happens, Holly, but a lot of people don't even think to be their own unique person or their own unique service. You know, they're so busy going shiny object syndrome. You know, Tony Robbins does this, and Brene Brown, or oh, I don't know how you say her name, but you know, such. I want to do what they do. Okay, but I'm not going to help you do it. You know,
right.
I can't build like that. So sorry. But most of the time, they'll go, oh, I feel so much better now. I feel like more like me. Do you find that as well? Once people tap into,
absolutely,
you know, getting rid of all the other stuff, they're like, oh, now it feels right.
Right. And I want to be clear that I don't do websites anymore. I haven't done websites for about 4 years.
I do.
But
I love them.
The strategies, though, as far as, you know, how you're building visibility for your business and, you know, how you're delivering your programs or how your business is structured, even, I find that people will be looking at, you know, what everyone else is doing. And it doesn't necessarily, like, it sounds good in theory, but sometimes it doesn't actually look the same way when it's applied to you. And so, you know, just an example, because I do work with a lot of service providers that are, you know, in a one-to-one model, especially coaches, and they think that they need to start creating this ascension model that goes from one, from, you know, a low-priced program to a high-priced program, or a one-to-one and then one-to-many and then a home study. Like, they think that they need to have these things in place. And really, those things are arbitrary. They are strategies, but when we really get down to, okay, how do you do your best work? How are you most happy? And, you know, maybe locking yourself, if someone has a really strong independence and freedom value, locking them into a call at the same time every day for 6 months can actually be excruciating. And we might find that maybe they need, you know, a different kind of offer. So it's definitely important to take the strategies you're seeing and what other people are doing into account as ideas and suggestions, but always make sure that you're coming back and looking at, you know, why did you start your business in the first place? What lifestyle are you trying to create? How do you do your best work? What makes you the most happy? Because all of those things can be incorporated into what you're doing in your business and make you actually better and more desirable, because your clients, they want you when you're in your genius, and they want to, you know, work with you in the best way you're presenting yourself.
Exactly. And yeah, it's a funny thing, and I've noticed this time and time again, even though many of us are virtual service providers and everything we do is online or Zoom or email, however we communicate with our clients, too many of us, in my opinion, and this is just an observation that doesn't seem to go away, I keep stumbling across it. Oh, we're open from, you know, 9 to 5. What? Why 9 to 5? You know, you may have a client in another country. It's 10 o'clock at night for him. It's 2 in the morning for you, or whatever it is. You need to find a way to be available. I mean, I've got a client right now that we're in the middle of something that's pretty big. We're both very excited about it. We're speaking on Saturday and Sunday, and probably twice on Sunday. You do what you have to do. And I don't understand why people lock themselves into, oh, well, you know, these are my business hours. Contact me on Monday. What the heck? Maybe I'm just missing something. I don't get it.
Really? I'm just the opposite.
Tell me how you operate. And I don't do this all the time. So those who are listening, don't try to call me on Sunday as a rule. But when there's something that's happening, don't do it. But, you know, when there's something really important going on, you can only both be available on Sunday at 2 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Make it happen.
And
so tell
me
how you operate.
I'm not going to say I've never made an exception for, like, a client that I was like, I really, really, like, want to play with you.
Right.
So, I mean, and it could just be a lifestyle thing. I have 2 kids, 1 on the way, and only certain hours that I can work.
Right.
And so I have to hold very strong boundaries. And even if I didn't, I feel like your business, again, going back to, like, what is the lifestyle that you wanted to create? If you have enough clients coming in and enough people that, you know, you can kind of pick and choose when you work, you don't necessarily need to make exceptions and work. Like for me, if I was on a call, you know, in the evening, I would be completely useless. and I've tried, and it's not fun for
anyone.
Doesn't
work, right?
But on the other hand, you know, I do have clients, and actually my business partner is in Australia. And they, you know, she gets up at 2 a.m. to talk to me because she can do that. And she kind of lives on
right.
a US schedule. So I think it's kind of different for everyone, and you need to kind of sit down and, like, what is ideal for you? When are you going to be at your best? And be okay with setting those boundaries. And my clients know that, you know, if you message me at 3 o'clock on a Friday, I've already picked my kids up from school, and I'm probably not going to look at it until Monday. So, you know, if someone's doing a launch or they're, I know that they have something intense going on, I'll make sure that, you know, they have my, they can text me if they need to. But for day-to-day things, they're, you know, it's pretty set when you can get a hold of me and when it's, when I'm going to be able to be at my best for you.
Right. And that does make sense. And for the longest kind of time, I tried to hold to that, but I bounce around. You know, I noticed that in the very early morning, I am bright. I hit the tail running, hit the floor running. The devil says, oh, crap, she's awake. And then about 2 o'clock, I just fall completely apart. You know, I'm done. I've run out of steam. I literally will just walk off. I'll tell people, no, you can't talk to me at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. You don't want to talk to me at 2 o'clock in the morning or in the afternoon because I don't have any filters. And when I'm tired, I really don't have any filters. So let's just, you know, keep it nice and we'll talk at 7 o'clock at night. Because I found that around seven, I'm like, oh, and ideas come, you know, my creativity, you know, pops back up. So,
yeah, so you know your flow.
Yeah, it works for me.
And you
work
with it.
I do. I don't recommend anybody else try it, but I live alone with feline office assistants, and they don't care. You know, as long as I'm not smacking them off the keyboard, they're fine. But you do have to work with what works with you, the ebb and flow, and with your clients. But I do find that if you're a little bit too rigid, and some people can be, that's also not, it's not healthy, I don't think. You have to be able to compromise when you need to compromise, but set that, you know, that block back up and say, no, don't. And I don't let people text me ever. I just don't. Mm-hmm. That's a line in the sand that's not going to change ever. So, you know, there's some things that you have to say, this is acceptable. Don't do that again.
Right. And you have to keep in mind that it's going to change. You know, when I was, didn't have kids and it was just me and my boyfriend, now husband, like flexibility was completely different and my lifestyle and everything was completely different. You know, I was well rested for one. That was a plus. But you're going to go through seasons and what's working for you now, you know, might not feel right a year from now. And that's kind of what, one of the things we're going to talk about with the plateau is.
Yeah. I was just going to ask you about that.
Yeah, so how do you recognize those moments when you need to reassess? Because it's so easy to get into a routine and a way of doing things, and then it's you're just kind of going through the motions and you don't realize that maybe you've outgrown that and maybe things do need to change.
Well, let's talk about that, because one of the things that I mentioned at the top of the show was that there are two most common reasons successful businesses stall out or hit that plateau. What are the two that you see the most, and how do you help solve those?
Yeah, so one of them is kind of what we were just talking about. You've outgrown your business in some way. So either you started like I did, where you kind of went for the low-hanging fruit, what you felt was easier to set. I apologize if you can hear my kid screaming downstairs.
Oh, it's okay. You're going to hear my cat any moment. I did, but that's okay.
Just so you know, they are fine. There is an adult with them. They are okay. So what I was saying is that you've outgrown a part of your business. So you might have started with low-hanging fruit that felt easier to sell, or you felt more qualified, and that gave you confidence. But it's not necessarily the business you want forever. And you reach a point where it's time for you to step up into what you really want to do. And that is where a plateau will happen. And it's tough, because things that are working for you, were working for you before, will stop. Things that were easy for you become difficult. So prime example for me was, you know, I love teaching. I can, you know, ask me a question and I can talk about it for an hour and teach you every little nuance about it. And I was not able to do that anymore. It was like pulling teeth. And what it was is that I just taught the same things for so long. I was bored with them. And, you know, my opinions had changed and I just, you know, I was kind of over it. I just didn't want to do that anymore. But it felt like, you know, if I make changes, then I'm rocking the boat on something that's working pretty well for me. I don't want to cannibalize my income by changing directions, or, you know, what if I offer what I really want to do and it doesn't work and then I'm stuck here. So you never actually step into what you want to do. Another way you might outgrow your business is what we're talking about with, you know, how your business is set up. Your lifestyle might change. I went through, you know, huge transition when I had my first baby because I had been so used to being able to work when I wanted to and, you know, really being in control of my schedule. And I am someone that, you know, I have a very, very strong independence. Like I have to do things my way or I just don't function well. And now I have this little tiny tyrant that is like, no, you're not going to work right now. No, yeah, you might think that's the priority right now, but I'm the priority. And you know, having to just readjust the way I was operating, like I had outgrown that in a way that, you know, it took me a really long time to adjust and just begin to operate in a different way. And during that time, you know, my business struggled and I plateaued hard. But once you take a step back and assess what the problems are and, you know, what you might actually be called into, because most of the time it's you're being called into something bigger that either you've been like aware of subconsciously, but maybe avoiding because you're afraid. Or you're being called into something bigger that like straight on hits you in the face that you are just like, who am I to do that? And the universe, God, what, you know, whatever you believe in will continue to pull you toward that. And unfortunately, the way that happens is by just making everything else kind of fall apart until you finally give in and do it, which we can talk about because that, you know, that happens.
And they've
so
done
that's
that.
One. Yeah. I think everyone can probably relate to that happening at some point or another.
Yep.
So one, that's one is the outgrowing. And then the two is that, again, what we were talking about at the very beginning of following the advice, the strategies that everyone else is doing and building a business that doesn't necessarily work for you. So for instance, maybe you have a business now that is so high touch, so like needs to be done one-on-one that you've created a situation where you can't leverage. And maybe you've built your entire brand around the fact that you give people so much attention. And this is really common, especially when someone's starting out and they see, and they may have experienced programs where they didn't get a lot of attention from the person they were hiring. And they didn't get the results that they wanted. And they like are deeply committed to making sure that that does not happen to their clients, which I admire and is great. However, in doing that, sometimes there's some missteps in the way you structure, in the way you message and brand yourself, that becomes the selling point and not the actual magic that you work and not the actual results that people are getting. And you'll find that with experience, and as you develop your skills, that you can create the same results for people in different settings other than you really just needing to do it for them. And that was another thing that took me a long time to learn because I felt like, you know, especially with messaging and copywriting, that it was just easier for me to do it for my clients. You know, I would try to teach them, but it was just easier for me to take the information I had and create it for them. But then I learned how to teach it. And now my clients, you know, when they learn how to fish versus having to come to me to do everything for them, and it empowers them and it makes them better business owners. And then we get to focus on like really cool, higher and more advanced strategies because they have the capabilities. So it's been even more impactful and that's much more leverageable. So there's ways that, you know, any, no matter what your business is, because I work with a lot of people that are like really intuitive and don't believe that those kinds of things could be replicated. They can be like, there's ways we can find kind of the method to your magic and create a business model that, still delivers the results that you want, but in a way that you can scale. So kind of coming back to the original question, when we're talking about the plateau. You basically you're locked into something where you're trading time for money and you literally have no option but to plateau. unless you're going to start jacking your prices up, which, you know, brings in a whole other slew of fallout that'll happen.
It does. And, you know, what happens with so many people is they say, okay, I'm going to be really reasonable with my fee structure. But when it does come time to say, okay, you know, you've been with me for a while, I've proven my worth, we're working really well together, I need to raise my prices, a lot of people won't do it because they're fearful that the client will go, see ya, which happens. Or you're just not confident enough that you really are worth $100 an hour as opposed to $75 or whatever it was. You have to be really careful. I think in the very beginning that you can scale up and that, you know, people understand that this is, you know, this, you're not going to be at whatever this, and I always work on retainers, but this retainer is not written in stone forever and ever. Amen. I have clients that have been with me for a decade or better. Those fees go up, not every year, but they go up and they're perfectly happy with it. But
right.
They understand the value. I'm not having to go, can I just have $5 more? It doesn't happen.
Right.
But I've seen it happen, and I know you have too.
Right, because you are continually growing, adding skill sets.
Exactly.
You're continually training and, you know, bringing more and more to the table. So it makes total sense that the value should be increasing.
But why are people... I was a little bit reluctant to raise my fees in the beginning because, you know, I was in a fairly new industry, fairly new, especially for women. And, you know, I was, you know, part of the whole virtual assistants thing for a while until I burnt totally out. I mean, I completely burned out. And at the end of it, you talk about worried about income because I just trashed. I mean, I just, when I would, you know, a client would leave through attrition or in one case a client passed away, I just didn't replace them because I couldn't do it anymore. I was worn out. And you know what it was? I finally figured out there was no challenge for me. It was so stinking easy. And you said it earlier, I was bored out
right.
of my skull. So eventually, and it took about a year for me to pretty much trash my client base and start over. You know, working new people in, doing the things that I really, really wanted to do. But you talk about scary. I mean, my income just went down, down, down. Oh, crap, down. Like, help. You know, do I need to go get a job? And Holly, you don't want me in an office. You really don't. I'm an introvert. I don't play well with others. I run with scissors. And if you want coffee, get it your own damn self. You don't want me in your office. So, you know, I had to really sit down and have a talk with my very fearful self, like, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? Why are you not replacing these clients? Why aren't you marketing? And the answer was, I didn't want to. But once I got past that effort to, you know, change and scale, it was fine. And it got fine very, very quickly. But that was a year of total abject fear for me. And I hate to even admit it, but I did it to myself and it was deliberate.
Yeah, that's exactly what we were talking about with the, you know, the knock, knock, knocking. We're going to tear everything down that you're comfortable with until you step into it. And the earlier you can recognize when that's happening, you don't actually need to go through the whole, you know, rebuilding and starting over and whatnot. You can phase much more gracefully, though, and, you know, hindsight's always 20/20. I feel like, you know, this is a good time for people to, we're kind of raising awareness to people, like, if you're feeling like this now, maybe
right.
you should explore,
do something
like,
different.
Yeah, maybe you should explore that maybe there is something bigger calling you. I didn't really mention this, but what you were talking about reminded me of it. One of the ways you outgrow your business is your clients. You might be working with a certain level of client now, and you have developed skills, experience, like you are operating at such a high level that they can't even utilize the knowledge and experience that you have. And that's a reason why you might get bored. So you might have just, you might want to do work that is similar or even the same as what you're doing now, but the client might need to change. And you might need a client that's going to challenge you a little bit more. So it's not always about changing your industry or your service, but, you know, just looking at all the aspects of your business. Who am I working with? You know, is this, are they able to really execute on what I'm teaching them? Are they challenging me? Are the questions they're asking and the things that they're asking for, do I nerd out about them? Or am I just kind of like, blah, 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 I'm going to just repeat the thing that I've repeated 100 million times and I'm bored.
And you're right. I mean, I've always worked with high-end clients. You know, I have a rule. It's my own Denise rule, but, and I've had people say, well, how can I work with you? You know, what will make you want to work with me? And I'm very frank with them. I have to like you. I have to like you, respect what you're doing, and admire what you're up to. And if it's just not all that interesting, I don't go that far, but if it's not that interesting to me, I'll refer you to somebody else. But you're not going to become my client, because my clients tend to stay with me for a long, long time. So I like to start out with high-end clients just so I don't get bored. So I don't feel like, you know, I'm just doing grunt work here. I don't want to do grunt work. I want to consult with them and, you know, really work with them to get them moving up and up and up and me moving with them. Or maybe I'm slightly ahead or maybe they're slightly ahead, but we always catch up in the end. So, you know, that's, right. I think, so important to find the clients that just make you excited to get out of bed every day and go talk with them or work on their project. And sometimes it's easy to hang on to those retainers, been there, done it. And once I started saying, okay, you know, we've got a little bit of attrition going on here, that's fine, I'm not going to replace. And then when it got really hit my bank account, I was like, oh, geez. I think I sat in a corner and cried at one point. I was like, oh, my God, what are you doing? But nothing I was doing made me just go, ah, it's a new day. I was so bored. It was pathetic.
Right. And it sounds like you have a good system now for how you're
I do.
Filtering, getting those ideal clients. And that's probably what makes you so amazing to work with, is that you're only choosing those clients that are a good fit for you personality-wise, skill-wise, and, you know, what they need. And those are that's the kind of person you want to work with. You want to work with the person that, you know, is that discerning. And what it does is it creates this feeling for your prospects, like they want to be that person. They aspire to work with you. And if you create a business model where people are aspiring to work with you, then, you know, you've got something good going.
Exactly. And what happens with that too is that, you know, now you're referral based. The biggest mistake that I see people making, you know, when it's a fledgling business, no matter what it is, they tend to just go, I need the money. I'm going to take this project or this, you know, quick little thing, and I'm just going to do it. I'm going to knock it out. And then pretty soon, it never ends well. Exactly. And people are listening, what are you talking about? You just made money. No, you just spent a whole bunch of time on something that you probably didn't know how to do. You had to train yourself how to do it. The client wasn't happy because they didn't know how to explain it. You weren't adult enough or, you know, able to say, okay, this is what I think we really need to be doing. Conversations were stilted. It's horrible. Don't do it. Do not take anybody that says, oh, I'll pay you $75 an hour and I need you to start yesterday. Spidey sense. Listen to your spidey sense. Don't do it. I know it sounds terrible, but you don't need the money that bad.
There is someone else out there that is going to come and be a much better fit.
Exactly. That's exactly right. So do you have any, you know, any kind of examples you can share, you know, obviously anonymously, with the clients who have come to you and said, man, I'm stuck, Holly, I don't know what to do. You know, I think I want to do something different. I can't scale. I can't get my current clients to pay me what I know I'm worth at this level of my business growth. Do you have any examples you can say, this is what we did and this is what worked?
Yeah. So yeah, there's a lot of examples in what you just said, because those are all like different scenarios that I've definitely dealt with in different areas. One person that comes to mind was someone that I had actually worked with back more at the beginning of my career, about 8 years ago. And she, we built her brand. This is back when I still did website design. So we built her brand, her website, and she had been working behind the scenes for some pretty big names in the fitness industry. And she'd ghostwritten some books for them. And like the industry knew her, like people, the gurus all knew her, but obviously the consumers did not. And she wanted to step out and create her own brand and really step out and start sharing her own content and building her own name. So we did that a long time ago. And, you know, that took off, and she's created all these different, she created a skincare line and all these different things. And then, you know, probably about 5 years later, she just kind of, you know, stopped. She took a break. You know, it just didn't feel right anymore. She was just finding that it was kind of a grind, what she was creating. There was something missing, and she wasn't really sure what it was. So, you know, fast forward, she comes back, and we explore that, and we explore some of the things that she'd been going through personally, and realizing that there was a lot of growth that had happened in her philosophy around wellness, and that it wasn't all about what went into your body. And she wasn't really sure how to articulate the things that she had learned in the new philosophy she had. So what we did was we kind of went back to the basics and just fleshed out, you know, what is the message? What is the mission? What is the passion that you're bringing? And then how do we describe that to people so that they get it? And so we ended up shifting her brand. She rebranded and still has all the assets that she had before, but now she's added to it this whole other side of her new intellectual property, essentially. And it was really cool because it was one of those things where, and this happens a lot, where you go from something really, really tangible and to something really, really woo-woo. And that's probably my specialty. Is like, so I've, you know, worked with a business coach that now is a, you know, a spiritual intuitive coach. And so she was going from something really tangible, like what kind of food are you putting in your body, what exercise, et cetera, to managing your mindset and your emotions and your spiritual needs and how that affects your wellness and your weight and hormonal imbalances and like all the real physical things. And it was a question of, you know, are people really going to understand this? Are people going to want to buy this? And you know, is this something that is even a business? And we got the answer pretty quickly because within a month of launching the new program, she'd already sold 30 copies of it. And she has, you know, been interviewed on podcasts, and she has a Facebook group now that is devoted to this idea that, you know, a year ago she wasn't sure was even something that would be viable. Probably my favorite. That's like my favorite project is something where, like, you know, like you have, it's the thing. It's like the thing that just, it's tapping you on the shoulder, but you're like, yeah, that's not possible. Who am I to do that? That's not a viable business.
Imposter syndrome. We all go through that.
And then, you know, showing people that it's totally possible. You're not the only one that's thinking about this. You know, if it was a need for you, it's going to be a need for someone else. We just need to message it in the right way and get it in front of the right people so that they can find you, because chances are there's people that are waiting for what you have. And that's like what I nerd out about, is the more advanced, nuanced messaging strategies to really, you know, do the things that people don't think is possible, because it's just so hard to describe most of the time.
It really is. And I go through this with a lot of people that I mentor about podcasting. They'll say, oh, I just, you know, I don't know who I am to do this. My attitude is always, get your voice heard. You've got something that somebody needs. There's no question. Get your voice heard. But it sounds to me like with this particular client, you're talking about not just the mind-body balance, you're talking about mind-body integration, which is something I think that is different. You know, it's all part of the same thing. Instead of a balance, you have to balance, you know, what you're thinking, you have to balance what you're eating. But it's really, if you're doing all of it at the same time, Why do you have to balance one to the other? Why can't you just say, this is who I am. This is what my body needs. This is what my brain needs. This is what my mind needs. This is how I'm thinking. I need to drink water right now. I mean, it just seems like it's part of the whole body mind system, if you will, mm-hmm. unless I'm just reading it wrong.
No, you're reading it right, but it sounds a lot simpler than it is, because someone can know what they need to be doing, but then actually putting that into practice and then actually keeping it into practice when stress happens and setbacks happen and, you know, you fell off the wagon and now you feel like you need to start over. Like, there's so much psychological stuff that happens when it comes to your body, because sometimes your mind and your body are like arguing with each other.
Oh yeah.
And how do you navigate that? So like,
put yourself in time out.
Right. It's like those are the kinds of things that she's addressing. And yeah, it's like when you put it into context like that, where people start to recognize, oh yeah, that totally happened to me. That's when you're reaching people. And that's what you really want your message to do, is you want it to reach people on that level where it's like, oh yeah, that's happened to me, or, oh, that's why I haven't been able to do that. And this, you know, here's a little gem for you guys with your message. Every marketing person will tell you, you know, pinpoint what the problem is that your target audience is having. And, you know, it's usually so simple, like they're not getting enough sales, or they're burned out, or they need to lose weight. Like it's a problem that is so generic and whatever that you feel like this can't really be it. What you really want to do is find out, why haven't they been able to solve this problem? So what is the missing piece for them? And your opinion of what that missing piece is your message. And someone else is going to have a completely different take and perspective on it. And that's their message. And that's why there are so many people offering very similar services to you, very similar outcomes and promises and whatever. So it sounds like they're doing the same thing, but it's those nuances in the way you view the audience, the problem, the way to solve it, and how you're communicating that. That's what makes you stand out, and that's what makes clients recognize, ooh, this person gets me. She's totally pinpointing the piece that I've been missing. I've never heard someone talk about it like that. And, like, clearly this is the person I need to be working with.
Exactly. And so many people will say, oh, well, I can't do that. Let's go back to Tony Robbins. Tony Robbins is already doing that. Look at the people he surrounds himself with. Russell Brunson, Dean Graziosi. I mean, come on. I mean, he doesn't stop and just say, I'm the guy. You have to listen to me. He finds people that have slightly different perspectives or different skills, and they all partner. And it's an amazing thing for everybody involved.
Right. Yeah, because, I mean, you can either look at everyone as competition, or you can look at it as, you know, we all do similar things, but we do it in different ways. And there are some people that are going to be perfect fits for you and some people that are going to be perfect fits for me. And when you look at it from that perspective, your marketing becomes a lot less intimidating, and it feels a lot less like you're drowning in this, like, just loud marketplace. Because you can stand out, and you don't have to be super loud to do so. You just have to be saying the right things that are going to, you know, hit the right person between the eyes with, yeah, that's me.
Exactly. And you mentioned personal growth. I mean, that's such a big, big thing in how we impact our own businesses, how we impact our clients, our consumers, our colleagues. You know, personal growth should be happening all the time. And right now, I think I read somewhere that, you know, personal growth, self-growth is the biggest product out there, or product or marketplace out there. Everybody wants to better themselves or better their environment, or, you know, find a better cat food for their cat. I mean, we're all looking for something that makes just something better every single day. And we're all eyes to within ourselves, like, how can I be better? How can I serve better? What can I do that will be helpful to people? Instead of, and this is a big mistake that I see, and I know you do or have seen it, people will come to me and say, okay, I've got this really cool thing. I need to sell 14 units a day. Oh, good luck with that. First of all, it's not going to happen. Second of all, if you're just looking at the money component and you're not really serving your market, I can't help you. I really can't help you. So then we go into the consultation part of it and the mindset and, you know, the servant leadership, if you will, and how can you actually help people? How can you, mentioned it, pinpoint their pain, solve an issue? And I think once you kind of look at things like, okay, I'm here, I can help. I think that makes trying to articulate your business and speak with other people just a whole lot easier. When you're speaking from the heart, you may not be my client, but you know what? I know somebody who would be ideal for you. Can I make that introduction? You know, always be looking to be of assistance, I think, is the best way to start.
Right. And that's why you want to be doing work that you're really passionate about, so that getting yourself out there in marketing and is not work. It's just another way to express and use that passion. And when you do that, it's good to set goals, like setting goal for, I want to get to a point where I'm selling 14 of these a day. Fantastic. But if that's the only thing you're focused on, like you said, it just puts blinders on, where, as you said, if you're coming from a place of service and using your passion and your platform to, focus on impact and reaching people, the 14 a day will come eventually. But you will be so much more satisfied and you're going to get much more traction much more quickly, rather than, okay, I need to get this many people through this landing page, the conversion needs to be this number. And, just if you're only focused on the numbers, it's just, you're going to continually be disappointed.
Oh, no kidding. I lurk around in a couple of podcast groups on Facebook, and I promise you, I will never need a facelift, because my eyebrows are constantly in my hairline going, what? What are you people talking? What? Who told you? Don't listen to that person. They're idiots. I don't say any of it, but I go through there and go, and the big thing now in some of these podcast groups, I'm just going to put it out there. The big thing, the overwhelming concern, there's two things. What are my download numbers and how can I get a sponsor? Okay, I'm not going to even go down that road, but I know you know what I mean. So it's like you are not looking at this right. But anyway, so let's talk a bit about how you went from working 60 hours a week, which I don't even know what that looks like. I really don't, because I'm a workaholic. It's like 60 hours, really? To 25 hours a week without compromising your income or your client results. And I know that you had, big changes. You had, baby, then another baby, and another one coming. But the question is, how did you, scale that back down without losing income once you got past, like, I don't want to do this anymore, I'm going to do something different? How did that work for you? How did it look?
Yeah, so let's just say it was not a graceful process.
I know, been there, done it.
I did it kicking and screaming, because I too am a workaholic. I love my work, and I will do it every minute of the day that I could. So it was not easy. And basically it started with, okay, how do I cram everything I'm doing into 20 to 30 hours a week? And that didn't work well. So then it became, okay, how can I let go of things that maybe, I wasn't really passionate about. So this is where that shift away from website design came. I love the end result of websites. I had a business partner. He did the actual art. And then I had a contractor that did the development, and I was, more of the project manager. Project management was taking 20 to 30 hours a week on its own. And it was like, herding Jell-O, essentially. And I'm really good at it. Really good at it. But, was more stressful than it was worth. So to be able to phase out of that, which took probably about 2 years to phase out of it completely, and doing it gradually, where we just started to, you know, start taking on less full website design projects and maybe just focusing on brand style guides and logos, and then phasing out of that completely. Because for me, it was really dialing in the messaging to be able to sell messaging strategy and brand strategy on its own without the visuals. And more recently, I had to, it's really only been a year. I rebranded myself last year because the people were still coming for visuals, because my old business was the Land of Brand, and with the name, people just like assumed that, you know, you're going to do everything. So I had to rebrand myself to just Holly Chantel, so that I could just change the perception of what I was doing, what you would come to me for, to the, you know, the leveling up in your business and attracting new clients and being able to raise prices and all the things that I'm doing now. And so back to the original question, 60 hours to 25. So cutting out things that, you know, didn't bring me joy in my business, finding, creating efficiencies. I'm really, really good at creating systems and processes, which is kind of what I do now with my clients is, you know, how do we systematize things? How do we make things as quick and easy as possible? Because it's just me. I don't have an assistant. And I do all of my marketing. I do all of my own copywriting. I work with all of my clients. I answer every single email. And I'm able to do that because I have very strong boundaries in place and I have systems and processes that, you know, make things very easy for myself. So I guess instead of, you know, a bunch of assistants, I have a bunch of pieces of software that do things for me. And yeah, so just getting really clear on what's important in your business, getting really clear on, you know, your minimum effective dose of what's going to maintain the status quo as far as marketing goes, for instance, or, you know, how can you make serving your clients easier? So just putting those efficiencies in place and not focusing on the things that everyone else is doing that look really good were either not fun for me, time consuming, and just really not producing the results to make them worth it, and being okay with doing things my way instead of the way everyone else is. All of those things combined, you can really create your own schedule. I've also gotten very creative with my business model. And, you know, where there's a lot of people that have so many different offers, I really only have three. And I have a lot of, you know, I have each of these offers are, I market them at different times, so they sound different, but there's really only three things that I do. And it makes it very easy to, you only have three things to manage. So for example, coming into, you know, I'm going to be having a baby soon. So I'm going to take most of the summer off and I'm only going to be delivering the two of the three that are most leveraged and, you know, needing to be on the phone one day a week I'll be on the phone 2 hours, but actual prep is probably maybe an hour in addition to that. And that's all I have to do. Just show up for my clients, and it makes things like super manageable.
It sounds like it.
Yeah, and it's not out of reach as people would think. It's, you know, I've gotten it down to a science at this point of all, not just the structure of the business model, but it really all comes down to messaging and making sure that you're attracting the right people and setting the right expectations for pricing and positioning the offer in the right way. That's really the key to being able to do what you want in your business. And I've learned that over and over and over again.
And I think that's the trickiest part because we do, look, people will say, Denise, what is it you do? Oh God, I do everything. I cannot write for myself for love or money. Now you ask me to help you, I'm on it. I can write like crazy. You want me to say what Denise Griffith stands like? I don't know. Like, can I get back to you? I do everything. I'm one of those, you know, Jill of all trades. It's actually embarrassing. And I'm having to, as part of my, you know, current, and I just started to rebrand myself, I'm having to get really clear on what it is that I will do, what I should do, and leave this whole other bucket of stuff that I can do, don't want to do, and put it in a, you know, closet somewhere. And that's tough because you're like, but I learned that. I knew, I paid for that. I want to do it. No, I don't want to do that.
I'm really
and
good at
great.
That.
I'm really
that's always
good
my
at
thing.
That.
I'm really good at that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, okay, how, you know, I probably need to hire you as a coach so you can say, Denise, sit down, shut up. Let's do it this way.
You're really good at that, but please don't do it.
Yeah, don't do it anymore. And logically, I know it, but it's hard won, hard fought. I paid for that degree. God darn it. It's like, come on. And I pay for an awful lot of, you know, courses. And, you know, I've invested a ton of money, different courses, different things. And it's like, okay, now's not the time for that one. Put it away. It's hard. And it's really hard to hone down or winnow down what you should be doing and where you're at your best and highest use. And I'm darned if that doesn't stop me every time.
Right.
So you can yell at me if you want. I mean, just say, Denise, don't do that. No,
don't
bad Denise.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's funny because I've recently, you know, I don't answer technical questions anymore. You know, something I'm really good at, like I can, if someone asks me a question, I can give you step by step from memory exactly like what to click, what it looks like, whatnot. But it takes like 10, 15 minutes to write it out. They could Google it.
I know.
Like, why am I answering these questions? Because I'm really good at it.
So, yeah, and
like,
I would just tell people, you know, Google's your friend. Just go look. If you really can't find it, then I'll help you. But come on, you know, do your own due diligence here.
And the thing is you feel, you know, they're paying me a significant amount of money. So I feel obligated to answer these questions. And then I realized that this is not what they're paying me for. Like they could Google this. Like what they need is the high level strategy. That's where my value is. And just because I'm good at something and it's easy for me doesn't necessarily mean that I can't ask them to do a little legwork. So those kinds of things are really important for you to recognize. Not you personally, but just everyone.
No, me personally. I actually just had, I mean, I'm still smarting from it. I just had this same conversation with a client of mine, and I adore him and his wife. And, you know, they do pay a significant amount of money just to chat with me an awful lot of time. But yesterday I finally had to say, I can't keep explaining this. You need to be part of this. You can't just hand it to me and make me come up with it. And then you go, oh, that's not really where I wanted to go with it. You have to do your homework. You have to do your due diligence. Here's an ebook I want you to read. We're not going to talk on Sunday unless you tell me that you have gone through this, and then we'll do the work. He wasn't really happy about it, and I wasn't either, but it's become an issue. So that issue has to be stopped.
Right.
It's, you know, I can't do all of your thinking for you, much as I, you know, I am kind of bossy, but there comes a point, you know, you have to do some of it yourself. So, Holly, we are out of time. Can you believe it's been 60 minutes already? It's been wonderful.
I know, it's
chatting
crazy
with you. I know. It's, before I let you go, where can people find you?
Yeah, so a few different places. My website's hollychantel.com. It's pretty easy. But I have a Facebook group that just got started. It's called Aligned and Profitable. And it's really sharing a lot of the same things that we've been talking about today. Like how do we have our cake and eat it too in our business, and have everything where everything you're doing in your business is completely aligned with who you are, how you operate, what brings you joy, and then also making sure that we're making money and not, you know, squandering, you know, sometimes you can be making revenue, but you're not making profit. So that side is more about efficiencies and just making sure that how you're operating your business is, you know, fiscally responsible and going to give you the lifestyle that you want without having to continually focus on bringing in more and more and more and more clients. So that's a cool place to hang out if you guys want to come say hi.
Oh, you'll see me in there in a minute.
Yeah.
Well, listen, so we know where to find you. Is there anything else you wanted to share with our audience before I let you go?
No, I want to say thank you for having me. I'm honored to be a guest. And yeah, I think this was a fantastic conversation. I've had so much fun. Thank you.
Oh, me too. Thank you so much for being my guest. Well, listen, before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us on iTunes and anywhere else you consume your business podcasts. Just look for Your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Thank you again.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.